Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of Demcast Network. I'm Kimberly Johnson, quarantined in D.C., and today I'm going to be talking with Rob Sullivan. He's an international speaker, an author, and executive coach. Now, I met Rob in, I guess it was 2007, and I was working for a janitorial supply, and I was part of the sales force. And so Rob was hired to come and talk to all of us about how to be better salespeople. And because I am a, you know, cynical Gen Xer, and because, like, you know, they say Gen X is cynical. Hello, that's me. And also, I am not like rah-rah work environment. I've never been. I've always rolled my eyes at any kind of corporate atmosphere. I've never liked it. So I had absolutely no enthusiasm about this whole workshop that Rob was hosting. And I was very surprised and delighted to find a very down-to-earth and cool person who has an open mind about life. That's what I really liked, that he had an open mind. In fact, I had friended him on Facebook and discovered that he had posted about, I don't know if it was, I think it might have been, as he mentions in our conversation a little later, he had once talked to this intuitive person, and a psychic person. And at that particular time, I was calling psychics. I was taking advantage of calling them, meaning that I called them too much and I was all bunched up and I wanted answers. But I just thought, oh, he has an open mind and he doesn't just immediately dismiss things that were that we can't necessarily explain. And I've always had that, you know, interest in the occult. I don't allow it to rule me or guide my decision making per se. At least in the smaller picture, meaning like I wouldn't call up a psychic. And if a psychic said, well, you better not get on that airplane, I mean, I would get on the airplane. So I didn't take them seriously in that way. But I'm going to be doing this podcast tomorrow, a patrons only podcast. And I want to talk about the fact that we all manifest our own life. I haven't been doing it deliberately before I started in December. But I was, you know, definitely when I found that Rob was open to it, I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. So, you know, we stayed friends on Facebook and all of that. And then I don't know, you know, he said, he explains when we talk further in our interview, you know, he got cancer, he had lymphoma and he dealt with it for 5 years. I remember him seeing it post about it on Facebook and I felt so bad. But I do also remember, as he will be talking about, seeing him, you know, talking about how much loving energy that he got from people. And he's got a really cool story about that too. So we're going to be talking about manifesting and the law of attraction in our own personal lives, but kind of like in the framework of COVID. So one of the, like, before I did the show today, I was freaking out. I was not having a good day. I'm just scared of what's going to happen. And I realized that, you know, one of the things Rob talks about, and he talked about on some Facebook post that he recently put up, was scarcity, like having a scarcity mentality or fearful mentality. And of course, it's very difficult to separate yourself from that, because right now what is happening is very scary. And there are reasons to, you know, people are not making money. People are worried about paying their rent. There's so many things that are happening that amplify the feeling of scarcity. And so how do we overcome that? That's one of the things that I want to get to. And it's not to say that we've got all the answers here, but definitely maybe some thought-provoking conversation for people who are just so concerned and worried and they don't know how to unwind. I offer up a couple of ways that I unwind, specifically after I go grocery shopping, because that's an extremely traumatic event for me. And when I talk to Rob, we do go over the process that I choose to go through afterward in order to calm myself down. And so that's really the main reason I wanted to have him on, because hopefully we're going to be able to get through this. We'll get to the other side. And if this is a subject that is at all interesting to you, I mean, you could start now, but I mean, it's something that, you know, I have for the majority of my life been too afraid to feel positive about myself. It was easier for me to beat myself up. It was it was like I was, if I appreciated too much, I was jinxing myself, which I think is ridiculous now, but that was the thought process that I had. And, you know, prior to my journey in this whole law of attraction manifesting thing, I would focus on things that I was resentful about. And much to my surprise, as soon as I started doing this, as soon as I was learning more about it and understanding how repeated thoughts become beliefs, then what you have to do is change the way you think. So if I told myself, I can't do this, I can't make enough money if I do this for a living, or if I, whatever it is, you replace that with something that's positive and that you can achieve. You focus on what you have instead of what you don't have. And that was a big thing for me. I always focused on what I didn't have. My mother would tell me this all the time. And, you know, she's like, you've got so much to be grateful for. My grandmother would always say, count your blessings. And my mother now always says, count your blessings. I wasn't counting my blessings. I was counting all the things that I didn't have and feeling like almost like a victim of my life. Even though I have been extremely fortunate in my life and I have so much, Rob and I talk about abundance. There's so much abundance. There's so much to be grateful for. Even if it's just something that's on the smaller side, if you have a nice home, if you're comfortable, if you get to, you know, at the end of the day, if you get to watch a movie that makes you laugh, that's an abundant, that's something that you can have as an abundance thing in your life, because you can laugh, because you can feel comfort, because you have food in your stomach. Whatever it is, there's something to be grateful for. And as soon as I started to replace my fearful feelings with feelings of gratitude, it was unbelievable how quickly my mood changed, because I was not in a healthy place a good portion of last year. I was faking it, but I wasn't. I wasn't in a good place. And I mean, I'd have my moments of feeling good. I don't want to sound like I was, you know, needing medication for my depression, but I was certainly, I had depression and I was feeling anxiety. And as I started this, which I am going to do a patrons only podcast tomorrow about my journey, as I started this process, it was almost immediate that I stopped. I just stopped focusing on the things that I either didn't have or that I couldn't change. You know, there's things that happened when I was younger, experiences in my life that shaped the way I viewed the world. And, you know, and then as you continue to go year after year after year and you repeat these kinds of messages, you know, this didn't happen, so this, or whatever negative thing, you keep repeating it, and it's like a muscle. You grow that muscle, and it is a belief now. You believe it. Whether it's true or not, you believe it. And then I just replaced. If I had that resentful feeling, if I had that negative feeling, I replaced it with something I was grateful for in my life. And it stopped me from going down that rabbit hole. And again, I do mention this in my talk with Rob, but I really want to drive this idea in, because oftentimes we're our own worst enemy and we allow ourselves to drown in the negative instead of finding the positive. For some reason, that feels easier. And what I've discovered is, no, it isn't. It's much more difficult to drown yourself in the negative and be in that negative energy and feel all of it and take on that burden than it is to replace those negative things with positive things, and then you just feel better. That's much easier. It really wouldn't have occurred to us. And that's why I like to say law of attraction isn't magic. It's just putting yourself in a headspace of yes, it's mine, and I'm grateful for it, and I feel really excited about it. And then there are opportunities that come to you. And then you have to take those opportunities. And even if it scares you, especially if it scares you or makes you feel uncomfortable.
Especially, yes. Well, let's go back to what you said, because you said something really important a while ago, and I want to make sure everybody caught this. When you talked about your letter to Rush Limbaugh, you didn't do that to make money.
No.
There was no intention of making money. That wasn't the point. The point was you were doing what you loved and what you were most passionate about. The universe took care of the rest.
Yeah.
The problem is we do things from a place of how can I make money doing this? And that's not usually the best starting point.
Yeah. Well, yes, because it's like, what are you going to do that's going to, I guess, you know, enrich other people's lives, but also, you mean, you can focus on yourself as far as what you want and all that, because it's like the idea of law of attraction is also I deserve whatever it is I'm seeking, as long as it's positive and not hurtful to other people. But I mean, you know, I deserve it. And then also, you know, I mean, because there might be somebody who works at, you know, I saw this video of a guy, he since has become a speaker, a public speaker, but I guess he used to work at Nordstrom. And so I was really surprised at how much freaking money people make selling shoes at Nordstrom. He worked in women's shoes. And I think he said like an average day was anywhere between $300 and $500 in commission. So I was like, that's a lot of money to sell shoes. But anyway, so he was talking about, okay, like on Sundays, those were usually a slower day. And so, you know, he would maybe sell $300 worth of shoes on that day. So he decided that he was going to visualize himself selling, you know, like $658 or whatever it was worth of shoes. And he also specifically visualized, he said that there were a lot of people, and he lived in California, there were a lot of people who traveled from Mexico, and they would buy shoes at Nordstrom for their family, and they would go home with them. And it was a kind of thing where they weren't going to be returned. And I guess in shoes, you know, you have to factor in, when you're working on commission specifically, there's going to be returns. So I can't remember what term it was, but he was hoping that he would get, you know, a certain amount of customers that were those customers that were going to go buy, you know, shoes to take back to Mexico, and that they weren't going to be returned. And so the first day he tried it, he came within like $20 of his goal, and he got, you know, a number of those customers who guaranteed they weren't going to return them. And so in that particular case, I mean, that's not necessarily beneficial to anybody else but him. So I mean, I think that you can take this and like say, like if I were a sales rep, I mean, obviously you met me when I was selling janitorial supply, and I never used this. I never used, you know, law of attraction or anything when I was in sales. And I wonder, like, how successful I could have been if I did. But
I want to challenge something that you just said.
Okay.
Because there's a built-in assumption. And this happens with, you know, in the area of sales a lot. Because you said he was he was the only one who benefited from that.
Right.
I disagree.
Okay.
The people who bought what the way I look at it is these were people who they could have been shopping for months for the perfect pair of shoes, and suddenly they found them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, and so they got something, because if they didn't see value in it, they wouldn't have made the purchase. Because
right.
I, you know, I've been into Nordstrom's a
That's
few times
true.
Where I
You're
bought
right.
nothing.
You're right.
If I don't see value, you know, so he, you know, found the people who were most likely to be enriched by it, not the ones who were doing it as a trial and, oh, you know, I'll wear them for a couple of days and send them back.
Yeah.
You know, and so he found the people, they were attracted to him.
Mm-hmm.
Who were, you know, in need of something that they were going to be excited about. So, and he sold it to them. That's a win-win.
That's true. You're absolutely right. So there you go. And what I kind of want to ask you is now, for instance, now we have individual perspectives. So we can say, you know, like what you were talking about, you feel confident in it, and then you're going to get these customers, and you're going to fill up your calendar, and then it happened. But then now when you go to something like COVID, it's very difficult to not give into the fear. And like, you have the luxury of not having to look at the news. I have to look at the news because it's what I do for a living. I mean, my podcast and what I write focus primarily on politics. Sometimes I can, you know, talk about body image. Sometimes I write about things that are not politically driven, but people know me as somebody who has a big mouth about politics. And so I have to keep up with it and understand. And there is, you know, also there's this part of me that it's kind of like, I can't look away. I have to know what's going on. And so, you know, speaking of scarcity, the thing that's freaking me out this morning, and maybe, I know you don't want to necessarily hear bad news, but I want to get your perspective on, perhaps do you have a way to combat negative feelings when you hear negative, instead of telling you what the negative news is, I'll just say, if you hear that there's negative news, how do we overcome this? And then also, or how would you overcome it? And then the fact is there, like I said, there's a collective perspective. And one example is, you know, everybody keeps saying out there in the world that Trump is so hard to beat. Well, we keep pushing that narrative, and then it becomes a reality. He's not hard to beat if everybody just shows up and votes for the other guy, and then deals with the other guy in any way they, you know, whether they like him or they don't like him, then they deal with him once he's elected. But I keep hearing like there's lots of doom out there. And I talked about this with this woman, Terry Canfield, last week. She's like, all these doomsday people saying, we're not going to have an election and we're not going to have this and we're going to get Trump and things are going to get worse. And everybody's just like, not everybody, but there's a large number of people who are feeling extremely defeated. And I feel like that perspective could come to pass. We can make that come to pass if we keep repeating this to ourselves, because it's the same idea. Keep repeating it and it becomes a belief. And so the first question I have is, how do we overcome realistic bad news, and how can we pull ourselves out of focusing on that?
So, you know, part of it, you know, is for any news story that's out there, and I know you're in the business, but I'm not at all a fan of news in general, simply because, you know, it's manipulated. You know, if you talk to, you know, even you don't even have to go to the tin hat people to know that there's been coercion in terms of what stories can be shared and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, even in Chicago, you see that all the time with we have tons of crime, you know, in certain areas. And we've had mayors who basically told, you know, like there'll be crime on Michigan Avenue and it won't end up in the news because, mm-hmm. you know, somebody somewhere told them, don't, you know, print that story. Don't air that on the 10 o'clock news. And so for every story that's out there, there's at least one or two stories that contradict it. Mm-hmm. And so you have a choice of, am I going to believe this version of the facts? Because when a big part of what I work with people on when you're talking about negative thinking is, there's a wonderful book, by the way, it's called Learned Optimism by a guy named Martin Seligman, who used to run the American Psychological Association. The guy is absolutely brilliant. And he talks about what he calls explanatory theory. And basically, there's ways of explaining things to yourself. And the way that, you know, he breaks it down into three areas. Is it permanent? Is it personal? And is it pervasive? So let's say if you and I were playing tennis, and, you know, or you were out there playing tennis and you had you didn't play well at all. How do you interpret that? Do you say I had a bad game, or do you say I'm a bad athlete? You know, because are you limiting it to this one thing, this mm-hmm. one afternoon of playing tennis? Or are you calling it a lifetime of I suck? Mm-hmm. You know, is it pervasive? Is it going to affect everything I do? You know, where it's not just I'm a bad tennis player, I'm a bad athlete. Mm-hmm. Is it me as opposed to, you know, I got to get a new pair of shoes. These things, you know, I kept tripping over this lace, you know, which is, believe it or not, a positive interpretation of the facts. And so that he gets into all this stuff. And what happens is we create our own interpretation of things. Mm-hmm. The book is fascinating. There's a quiz at the beginning that measures your level of optimism. And 10 years after I did it, I didn't even practice the techniques in the book. I was just aware of the techniques, and I was markedly more optimistic a decade later, simply by being aware of some of the thought patterns. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is, you know, what are you telling yourself? Because you can, you know, with one, if I've got time for a quick example,
sure.
There's a company, this is a perfect example is, there's a company that I did some work for, and they had, in September of this year, this was all well known at the time, so I'm not sharing anything that was confidential. They had announced in September of that year that they were going to potentially outsource the entire IT function of the company. And so they, you know, but because it's a really family-friendly company and whatnot, they decided to tell the employees what they were doing and thinking about. What happened? People naturally panicked. And they started thinking, oh, you know, and then they created all these dialogues about, you know, oh, they're not telling us everything and, you know, they're hiding things from us. And so I went out there and I did a stress management workshop for them. And it was fun and interesting. Well, and what I was walking into, by the way, they had brought somebody in previously to do stress management, mm-hmm. but this woman brought candles and meditation techniques to IT people. this did not go over very well. So I was already up against that when I walked in, but I walked in. And I sat down in the front of the room and I said, the manager's left. I've got literally, it's an auditorium, you know, with the slanted 45-degree angle seating and a couple hundred people in there. I said, all right, let's talk. What are all the examples you can give me of the company not being fair to you right now, mm-hmm. you know, and I just started flip charting for like 20 or 30 minutes.
Wow.
And I can't, you know, flip chart after flip chart. I'll go, oh, they're doing this, they're doing that. Great. And when we finally finished, I said, are we done? Anything else? You know, everyone's like, no, that pretty much covers it. I'm like, okay, good. I said, what evidence is there that they actually do care about their employees? That was my only question. And I just shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a little bit of time, but then people finally started saying things like, well, they didn't, you know, if they were really worried about money, they wouldn't have hired you.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, thanks for that. and then I would prompt them occasionally with questions. I'm like, who in here has a friend who was ever laid off with no notice whatsoever, who didn't get the benefit of, you know, 6 months potentially to look for another job?
Mm-hmm.
Every hand went up,
yeah.
You know, and we started doing that. So we started looking for additional evidence that this mm-hmm. company actually did care about its employees and that they were maybe doing the best that they could.
Hmm.
And this workshop, they ended up doing it 8 more times because they wanted every one of their employees to go through it.
Yeah.
And that was, it was literally same set of facts. But what we chose to focus on
right.
were the facts, not the facts that support our negative point of view, but the facts that say, you know what, maybe this is a bit more hopeful mm-hmm. than I thought. Because you could, you know, if I asked you to chart up all the evidence that, you know, something positive that you're hoping for that you don't think is possible could potentially happen, you could come up with easily mm-hmm. a whole bunch of things. But your mind at the moment isn't doing that if it's focused, because I can't do two things at once. I can't sit here and catastrophize about my life and at the same time look for evidence that, you know, things are better than it seems.
Mm-hmm.
I have to pick one.
Right.
And that's the basis of, you know, we have a choice. We always have a choice.
Yeah. Well, and we do. And that's kind of like where I'm struggling today, because I feel like certain things are happening that I can't specifically control. But I do think that there is a bit of a collective energy that if everybody could just unite and get together, that the things that are looking not too good right now could take a turn for the more positive, because we, you know, I mean, and I certainly don't, you know, I have a limited audience. I'm not some great, you know, kind of huge, I don't know, what do you even call them? I don't want to use the word guru, but, you know, just somebody who can go out there and go, okay, everybody, think positive. And then they're all going to think positive, because they're not. As soon as I go back on Twitter or social media or something like that, or even certain friends that I talk to are going to say, I can't believe what's going on and this is happening and blah, blah, blah. Some take, in my opinion, a realistic approach. Some take a very negative approach. But I see the negative approach all the time. And that's something that, because I don't have any control over what they do, I'm just like wondering, like, how would you deal with someone if you were in my position where you're on, say, Twitter and you see somebody say we're doomed, which frankly today I even typed that I felt like I was filled with doom. But if you see somebody who feels that doom, how can you, like, in a quick little message to them say, you know, what would you say to try to turn their thinking around? Because it's so hard.
Yeah, Oh, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. It's just so hard, you know, sometimes to, at least it's hard for me. And sometimes I find it easy, but in other times I have a very, like, before we did the interview today or the show, I was crying and I was freaking out. And I, you know, I was kind of glad, thinking, all right, I'm going to talk to somebody who understands how to switch over or replace the fearful and scarcity thoughts with thoughts of abundance, and to and that just means that we all take a breath. And I mean, I can take a breath. I do this all the time, where I look at, you know, my home, my circumstances, my family. I have so much to be grateful for, and so I can focus on that. But it doesn't necessarily change the thing that freaked me out in the first place. So, like, again, how do you address somebody who is going through that?
Okay, good. So thank you for that. And I love the honesty and all of that. And we've all been there at some time or another, you know, whether it was today or last week or whatever. I got 3 words for you. Start with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be an example. You know, what I'm hearing in your story is that you, because you are a caring, compassionate person, want to make a difference. And you're putting weight on yourself to change the thinking of, you know, the collective, way too much pressure. You know, what your best opportunity to do that is by changing your own thinking and being a shining example of that. When I went through the tumors, as an example, when I was writing about stuff, I didn't do it, you know, because I was trying to be this, you know, more. In fact, I've never felt more vulnerable in my life to, as a man, raise my hand and say, I'm sick, I can't do this by myself, and I need your help. I mean, that's like the ultimate vulnerable. Yet people responded and said, wow, you know, you're so courageous. Yeah. You're so, you know, you're so much grace and all that stuff. I was unintentionally being an example of exactly what I wanted. And people, you know, told me how inspired they were. A number of people who got cancer after I did said, you know, you changed my journey. I approached it differently because of you. I wasn't trying to change them. I was trying to deal with it myself. And if you deal with it yourself and you're a shining example of whatever it is that you want, people will either come along for the ride or they won't. But it's not up to you to change them.
Right. Well, and I recognize that I can't, but I also feel like, you know, there I have like the two modes where I am the my mom has always called me the crack of doom. And it's funny because I have a tendency to jump down that rabbit hole, which, by the way, for the most part, it's so fascinating to me that since I've begun this whole journey of manifesting, I don't jump down that rabbit hole, with the exception of the COVID coming in. I only had a few good months before this happened. But there were certain things that I was focused, and it's thundering here, by the way, and it's pouring down rain. So hopefully the electricity won't go out. I'm giving you fair warning. But I had a certain number of, or I could say that there were certain times in my life, and I've always been fortunate. Right. I recognize this. And this is something that I've just recently recognized, too, where the universe has had my back. I remember so clearly there was this one time when I was probably like around 30 or something like that. I had inherited some money and the money was almost gone and I had to get a job and I was so scared. And I remember I was shopping at Albertsons, which was like a little lower, like in California, Albertsons is not as good as, say, Vons, which is basically Safeway. So Safeway is like the better store. And then there was Albertsons, which I considered to be a little less expensive. And so, of course, I had that scarcity kind of thought process going on. So I went to the lower expensive because I couldn't afford things. And I had this knot in my stomach and, oh my God. And it was like just feelings of doom. And then everything was fine. I was fine. I maybe, you know, my thoughts got in my way and I might've actually had more opportunities come my way if I had a better perspective on it or a more positive perspective on it. But I realized, wow, every time that I've, you know, gone down that rabbit hole and told you all, I mean, I'm really good at, or was really good at, well, this is going to happen and that's going to happen and this is going to happen and that's going to happen and everything is terrible and I'm a loser and I'm going to fail and everything is failure and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I will just keep going and going. And I felt like my mother has heard it. My boyfriend has heard it. And I really feel sorry for my boyfriend because my mom's used to me, but it's like my boyfriend listening to me go on this like rabbit hole spiral of how I'm a failure and how I'm never going to be successful and everything's going to suck forever. He would just look at me and go, he's like, you just have to keep marching on. You just, you know, yep. Poor guy. He's like, I don't know how to deal with her when she's like this. But when I started doing this, that's like I was saying to you earlier, I wouldn't allow myself to go there. And the other thing is that I had certain things in my life that had happened to me that I could point to and either feel resentful about, or I could stick blame and say, this is why I've never had success. This is why, and it's not, and I have had success, but when I'm in my doom mode, you know, I write everything off and as if it's not successful. I take away any of the power that I've achieved on my own. And so, but I've done, now what I do is instead of allowing myself to go to that thought, it might be something so simple as I am grateful for my bed. Because I truly am. My bed is like the most comfortable bed I've ever had. And I love it so much. And, you know, I'm grateful for X and Z and Y. And I have all these things that I can be grateful for. I have a refrigerator full of food. You know, I have somebody who loves me. I mean, there are just so many things. And so instead of going down the rabbit hole of what I don't have, which is often what I focused on, what I don't have, I began focusing on what I do have. And I think that brings you into the law of attraction because, you know, like attracts like. And so, you know, going back to that, when you're bunched up and you're feeling like, I want this, I want it, I want it, I want it so bad, it's always out of your grasp. But then when you just relax, it just flows right to you.
Exactly. So two things, because there's so much important stuff in what you just said. One, that, you know, you went to Albertsons, right? Well, you didn't, the point is you didn't stay home and not spend money, because staying home and not spending money tells the universe that you're afraid and that, you know, you went out and spent, you didn't spend the way that you would like to have spent.
Yeah.
You know, so things, you got the ball moving, you kept the energy flowing, you know, you didn't stop it, but you didn't open the floodgate up as much as you could have if you had just kept doing what you usually do.
Yeah.
Now I recognize that there's, you know, people will say, well, you got to be realistic, you know, what about the money, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's the other side of this, though, is one of the best bits of advice I ever got on this whole thing, because I was circling the drain financially at one point. And the I went to, my dad had this psychologist that he used to like to send people to. He was a doc. And I went to the guy, and I liked the guy because he wasn't the kind of person who's like, you know, who just listened to you quietly and then say, okay, well, I'll see you next Tuesday. You know, it was helpful stuff. And when I talked to him, after I did my whine about, you know, the world's up against me and blah, 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 and, you know, I this is all out of my control, he looked at me and said, Rob, he goes, your big problem is, he said, when you get in one of these moments, he said, you need to look in the mirror and you need to say, I chose this.
Yes.
You know, and he said, because you did choose this and you chose it for a reason, you know, and you, you know, give yourself the power back. And I love that. That was one of the turning points in my life. That guy was amazing.
And you, when you gave yourself the power back, you did that by how, what did you do?
I literally just started saying, you know what? He's right. I did choose this. And let's focus on all the reasons why I chose this, why I chose to do this on my own and not work for a company. And what that involves is being accepting of the roller coaster income. Because what I was doing was making the roller coaster income wrong. It's like, well, I can't, you know, be wrong about, you know, I can't make that a bad thing and embrace it fully by, you know, being counting on that for my living.
Yeah.
You know, it's totally inconsistent, you know, so I had to literally choose and say, yeah, I chose this. And literally I just regained my, it sounds weird, but in that moment I regained my power. I said, you know what? Yes, I did do this for a reason, and let's focus on that. And let's, you know, be grateful for it and find ways to make it work and look for the opportunities, you know, and the things that are going right, because when you focus on what is going right, you can bring more of that to the table. If you focus on what's not going right, you're going to, you know, that's why we have cliches. Things went from bad to worse, because that's what usually happens energetically. People get into a negative thing and they just spiral.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but people, the converse is also true. Oh, I was on a roll. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yes, you started vibrating at a higher level. You started getting more of what you wanted and more of it came. No one ever says, oh my God, I had the most amazing morning. And then at the end of the morning, it was awful. And then early afternoon was fantastic. And then mid afternoon was just horrible. I couldn't believe it. Nobody has a day like that, because we wouldn't, you know, it just doesn't happen.
Oh my God, the lights are flickering. I'm so worried here. Well, that's funny that you said that, because I chose to be an outside sales rep for a long time. I had been an actor, and then I got out of that, and I did it. I did the acting thing for like 10 years, and then I got out of that, and I went into outside sales. And I went into outside sales because I didn't like, I would never work for like an, I would never work in an office. I would never survive. I used to work like in retail situations in like department stores, but that was usually freelancing. And for a brief period of time, I did work behind the counter at a store where I had to be there, you know, X amount of hours per week. I never liked having to be in one place at one time with people watching me and telling me what to do. I'm not good with that. So outside sales had a real appeal to me, especially I was very good at manifesting the kind of job that I wanted, in that I wanted a company. And I would usually say this out loud, or at least, you know, in my mind, I want a company that's either based in another state so that I don't have to check into an office but like when I worked for Hilliard, which was actually a great company, it was a janitorial supply. This is where we met, when you did that workshop for Hilliard. They were wonderful. They were such, the two men that led, which actually were, I always throw this in there because, you know, there's so much anxiety about liberals and or Democrats and Republicans. Well, I'm a Democrat, and these two men were Republicans, and they always used to give me shit about Nancy Pelosi, but we always did it in a fun way. They were the two coolest bosses I've ever, ever, ever had. They were understanding when times were tough. In fact, my one boss had said to me, sometimes it rains, sometimes it's a drought. And that's, you know, if I was complaining, like, I don't have enough sales. And he's like, well, sometimes it rains. And it was like, wow, he was so awesome. He didn't put any pressure on me. He just understood that, you know, it comes in waves and you just got to go along with it. But my whole point here is that the reason I chose Outside Jails was because it fit the lifestyle that I wanted. I did not want to have to wake up and go to an office every day. And even if it was just like go to an office first and then go out in the field, because I like to work the way I like to work. And as long as you do a good job and you make the money, they leave you alone. And, you know, but if they can make you check into an office, and Hilliard never did. So I always chose a company that didn't make me go into an office every morning. And but what I was not focusing on was the money. I was always more of a, please, 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 let me get this much money. Please, 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 instead of, I'm just going to get it. I would have it in my head, very strong. I will find a company that I don't have to work, go and check in their office. And I always did, every single time. But the struggle I had was with, you know, earning. And some months were great, some months were hard, some companies were better than others. And that's the thing. It's like sometimes I went to work for a company that fulfilled my requirement of me not having to go on, but they were either on their way out, or, you know, the economy was going, whatever it was, the money wasn't necessarily there, or, and I wasn't focusing on it. And I didn't realize what you just said. You chose this. So be okay with the fact that the money's going to be up and down. And I never was okay with that. It always freaked me out. And sometimes I did really well, but other times it was really difficult and really scary. And then I allowed my fears to take over. And every time I did, every single time I'd have those months where it was like I had to meet my draw, and I was getting closer and closer to the end of the month and the money wasn't there, the more fear and bunched up I was feeling about it. So, you know, I think it's interesting to accept and choose. This is what I chose. And because I chose this, I'm just going to trust that I can get this done.
And, exactly.
And I didn't. I was afraid. I lived in fear.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Yeah, you succeeded in spite of yourself. So
yes.
You had the fear, but I would argue that your momentum,
yeah,
you know, you were driven by fear. You could have easily equally been driven by peace and opportunity, yeah, and gratitude.
Well, and I think I think the overall thing was I didn't really want to be a salesperson, but I didn't see any other options for myself. And so I did allow fear. And like, I look back on my experiences in the sales world, and I did pretty freaking well considering, but you know, there were circumstances that sometimes I just had absolutely no control over, where bad decisions were made by management or certain, you know, certain things were coming to. Like, for instance, I used to sell bone china and hand painted ceramic coffee and tea accessories, and the coffee and the ceramic stuff is never goes out, but the bone china comes in waves. And I remember the guy who owned the company, he told me that. He's like, this business, you go up, you go down, you go up, you down. I hit them in the uptime. And, you know, we did really well. And interestingly, you know, I eventually left, and there was also a ceiling on that job. I could only make a certain amount. There was no way to grow. You could only make a certain amount, and then that was it. So I thought, all right, now I want to grow. And after I left, that, you know, was, I don't know how long it took. It was a couple of years, but they're not even in business anymore because of circumstances having to do with, you know, the prices coming from England and blah, 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 blah. But I mean, you know, it's the whole idea of we are in control of more than we realize. We have more control with the way we perceive things, because thoughts are energy, and it's the energy that we put out into the world, of whether it's like, you know, scarcity or fear or peace and harmony. And I think, I don't know, like, what would you say, if there's anything to say during this time, for the people who are going to, because people who listen to my podcasts are definitely political junkies. And so we're in this roller coaster ride of, you know, we'll take the positive when we can get it, but right now there's not a lot of positives. How if you were going to be, you know, if you were a political person in the same kind of situation that I am, how would you approach it in order to stay positive?
That's a really interesting question. I need to think about that.
And if you need time, that's okay. And I mean, that's kind of like, yeah, where I'm, you know, I'll give you an example of what I do.
Sure.
As you know, it's like I said, you know, I go grocery shopping. I don't have things delivered. So I go grocery shopping, and it has become a very traumatic experience because, you know, I do all the precautions. I wear a mask. I wear glasses. I never touch my face. And then when I come home, I do the whole nine where I clean every single thing off. And it's literally from, I did the count on Saturday. I left my house at 2:00 in the afternoon. And by the time I was finished, and that includes a shower afterwards, it was 3 hours. It was just over 3 hours. So it was this whole 3 hour process of, you know, washing off my groceries, washing off the refrigerator door, washing off the door handle, all of the stuff that I had to do. And it really gets to me. It's very frightening, and I get so scared. So when I'm finished doing all of that, what I do is I lay down in my bed and I have my computer and I find either a guided meditation on YouTube or I just look for meditation music that's very calming and soothing. And then I put my headphones on and I lay there and I get myself completely relaxed. And then I visualize and I don't necessarily manifest per se. Sometimes I do, but they say you shouldn't manifest when you're feeling traumatized. You should always do it when you're visualizing what you want for yourself. You should do it when you're in a place of feeling really good. And so usually what I do is I try to make myself feel good by just, you know, putting myself in a surrounding where, you know, oftentimes I go to my grandparents had a house on the Eastern Shore, and that seems to be my like happy spot. So I go there and I just imagine like when I was young, I would be with my grandparents and they had a pier and I would, you know, lay out on the pier in the sun and I would feel the sun on my body. And then there was this little kind of patch of sand, because it was a creek, but there was this little patch of sand kind of underneath the pier that I liked to go and walk around and just, you know, just have this little time with nature and sit out and look at the water. And then I would imagine myself going into my grandmother's kitchen and having like comfort food and feeling love. And so that kind of takes my traumatized feeling, it takes it away, and I pull myself into love and serenity, and it does help. That's one way that I am able to get past the fear and the trauma of dealing with this.
I think it's perfect, because it's, you know, what you're describing is what I would describe as legitimate distraction. So yeah. In other words, I'm not gonna, you know, you can use the learned optimism techniques and counteract negative thinking on certain things that apply to rational or, you know, where rational thought and that sort of reframing would work. But in other cases where you're just feeling kind of down and it's not necessarily about reframing or where reframing might be a bit harder, mm-hmm. to find something. Now, you talked about meditation, but meditation comes in a lot of different forms. Mm-hmm. For me, it's picking up my guitar or sitting down at the piano for a couple hours. Right. And, you know, it, doing something where your mind is clear. You know, the one thing, like, for example, for me, scuba diving, mm-hmm. I can't think of a single time I've ever been scuba diving where I had this thought of, oh, well, you know, when I get back, I really need to do laundry. You know, I'm always fully present in that moment. And so find something where you can be fully present. You know, for some people, it might be knitting, whatever it is, but just do something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ideally, it would be productive. I mean, I know one woman right now who's dealing with it. She's knitting masks.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you can couple your relaxation or distraction with something that's going to help people, like I know my girlfriend, Steph, who's on the show all the time, you know, she delivers food to people who don't have money or can't leave their, or elderly people who can't get out or whatever it is, that's even better. I mean, she does it in a safe way, but she is helping people. And, you know, I mean, one of the things I did, I know the post office is having a lot of problems right now, and they're talking about not bailing them out. So I saw a post yesterday on Twitter where someone suggested, and even my mom had talked to me about it in the morning, that to buy some stamps. You know, it's like if everybody just buys stuff from the post office, they're going to get some money. And, you know, if there's enough of us on social media that see this, you just buy like a book of stamps for $11. It's going to help them. I don't know that it'll absolutely do the, you know, everything it needs, but it's an action you can take that makes you feel good. It makes you feel like you're, you know, giving back or doing something valuable for other people. And then, you know, it makes you feel good because you're doing that. So I guess that's the best we can hope for at this point, because there's so much out of our hands. You know, it's like, I can't control how the government handles it. I can't control how the virus is going to spread. I can only control what I do.
True. Yeah. And you know, one thing that I would be great is, you know, for me is I've been visualizing, and I know, you know, one person, you know, may not make much of a difference in that regard, but if a lot of people did it, it probably would.
Yes.
I've been visualizing.